Hello and welcome to Under New Management, the podcast that examines new and notable management research that can enhance your effectiveness as a leader in your organization. I'm Mike Johnson, an assistant professor in the Foster School of Business at the University of Washington in Seattle. In this episode, I talk with Christina Maslach of the Psychology Department at the University of California, Berkeley. We talk about a paper that Christina recently published in the Journal of Applied Psychology that looked at the early warning signs of burnout. Christina Maslach, welcome to Under New Management.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. Now, you're known in the research community for your research on job stress and burnout. Can you explain maybe how you became interested in doing research in this area?
Yes. I was a brand new assistant professor at UC Berkeley, and I wanted to start some new research on issues around emotion and emotional arousal, which I had been doing as a graduate student at Stanford. And I got interested in questions of how people deal with strong emotional feelings when they're in a job situation where it was important that they be very calm and cool and, you know, be able to make the right decisions and so forth. So at that time, we were trying to think about how people might misattribute the sources of the arousal, how they would cognitively reframe things and so forth. I didn't find much in the literature that really addressed the questions I had, so I decided what I would do is start interviewing people whose jobs might actually, you know, provide those kinds of instances and those kinds of situations where they would have to do that and get some insight from those interviews, which I could then develop into, expermental research. So I started doing interviews, and basically what was coming out from the interviews was not quite answers to the questions that I was asking, more let me tell you what I'm experiencing on the job. And I began to notice that there was a kind of a rhythm and a kind of a pattern to what people were saying about how they dealt with very stressful issues at work. I was focusing primarily on people in human services and emergency, you know, personnel and stuff like that. And people didn't really have a name for it, what they were experiencing. They thought they were the only one who was going through that. What's wrong with me? But finally, at one point, as I was talking with someone in poverty law, legal services, they said, well, I don't know what, you know, other people call it, but, you know, we're calling it burnout. And there was this sort of this aha moment of, you know, there may be something bigger going on here that is affecting people. Some people have a name for it, which people resonated to, and I sort of really switched my research to begin to focus in on what is this thing people are calling burnout.
And what do we know from past research about burnout, particularly the research that you've done on burnout?
Well, I think one of the key things that we've learned from all of the research, mine and that of others, is that factors in the work environment play a much larger role in predicting, producing, you know, influencing burnout than individual variables. So in other words, is it the person or is it the job? The research evidence would say it has a lot more to do with the job than it does with just the individual. On the other hand, I would say that's the wrong question because it makes it an either-or question, and it's really a both-and question. We've been able to identify sort of six major areas that where a mismatch or a misfit between the person and the job is very predictive of burnout. And when things are sense going better for people in those six areas, then we're more likely to see the opposite of burnout, which is work engagement.
Okay, and what are those six areas?
In no particular order, but one of them has to do with workload and, you know, job demands, how much you have to do, do you have the resources, the time, et cetera. A second area has to do with control, but control has to do with how much decision-making ability, you know, or authority you have, how much discretion or say over how you do your work, what choices you can make, or whether you're locked in that. And, of course, we know from a lot of research that when people have less control over what they're doing, stress and burnout is going to be higher.
Right.
Third area has to do with really the feedback function of rewards and recognition. And so people who are working in an environment where they're not getting very much of that kind of feedback for their work. They're not getting rewards when they do something well. They're not getting recognized when things go well. Again, greater stress.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth area is one that we call community. It really has to do with the relationships that people have with other people at work. Colleagues, you know, your boss, the people you supervise, your clients, customers, you know, vendors, whoever it is that you're, you know, have sort of regular working relationships with. And there what we find is that if there's an imbalance in terms of not getting the kind of social support, trust, cooperation, most importantly, we find working in an environment where there is not a good process for resolving conflicts, figuring out if we disagree, how do we move forward. So that's all in that community area.
Mm-hmm.
If it's that breakdown of community, then there's greater burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth area has to do with what we call fairness, and it's really people's sense of whatever the rules happen to be or how work is being done, that they are being treated fairly. They're being treated with respect, like a human being, and that whatever the processes are for who gets the good assignments, who gets promoted, you know, whatever, you know, who gets the corner office, whatever it happens to be, if people feel that things are unfair, this generates a lot of the anger, hostility, cynicism, you know, this take this job and shove it attitude that is so characteristic of burnout.
Right.
And then the sixth area is one that we call values, and it really is what it is, you know, the core values that we have that make life meaningful, and in this case, our work meaningful. And if there is a good match, people are in sync with, you know, the kinds of things that are important to them, that they believe in, they hope they're being able to, you know, to accomplish, make a difference, you know, in life, is in sync with the kind of work that they do. When people are operating in a situation of value conflict where what they are doing goes against what they actually believe is right, where they're doing something they're ashamed of or not proud of or, you know, all of this kind of thing. It doesn't mean they're doing something illegal, but, oh, my gosh, I'm having to lie to people in order to get the sale, and
right.
I just, you know, I can't deal with it. So one person would find that very, you know, would have that misfit. Somebody else who has a very Machiavellian, you know, set of values in the sense of, look, I don't care. My client comes first. I will do whatever I need to help, you know, my patient. And
mm-hmm.
if I've got to, you know, lie a little bit to say how sick he is so that I can get the authorization, you know, for the treatment, you know, so what? I mean, the important thing is the end. So, at any rate, so those six areas are ones in which all kinds of research over the years has, you know, sort of really has clustered. And what we're seeing is that it's both the person and the job and the sort of the notion of some kind of a balance or a fit or, you know, match,
mm-hmm.
a good match between people and the work situation is, you know, just much more predictive of, you know, success and engagement with the job.
Okay, so what research questions did your current study address?
Well, what we've been interested in is there a way to prevent burnout? In other words, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, you want to prevent a problem rather than having it come and then try and fix it and cure it. Are there ways in which we could identify early on that there might be some warning signs on the horizon of potential problems which would allow people to intervene a little earlier to try and, you know, make course corrections, if you will, and get things back on track? So what we were doing was doing a longitudinal study in which we were following people over time, worked with an organization in which they did an annual survey of all of their employees, and we had questions in there, so we were interested to see if from our measures, if we, you know, we had predictions that if people were showing one sign of burnout rather than all three, that might serve as a warning sign.
Well, what are those three signs of burnout? Yeah.
Yeah. With burnout, there are sort of three interrelated factors. One is exhaustion. That's mm-hmm. kind of the individual stress response. A second one is cynicism, and this is this very negative, hostile, distancing, cynical response to the job,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then the third one is really a more negative response, not just to the job, but to oneself, in terms of professional efficacy. Am I really successful? Am I really cut out for this work? You know, et cetera.
Right.
So we focused on the first two in this first study to make it as sort of clear cut and simple as possible, and said, if people are showing a high score on either exhaustion or cynicism, that might be a warning sign, a little red flag that something's happening. They're not showing a full-blown case of burnout in terms of the survey scores, but one of them is out of whack. So, you know, we should pay attention to those individuals. Second thing is we looked at their scores on the six areas that I just described and said if they're showing an early warning sign and they're reporting discrepancy or mismatch in one of those, at least one of those six areas, that might be the tipping point, and we, you know, those are the people or the groups that we would really need to focus in on and see what's going wrong. Would that allow the possibility of intervention?
Right.
So our research was really the, sort of a first attempt to say, could scores of those kind, that those early warning indicators, could they, at time one, actually predict later burnout or engagement a year later? And basically the research said, yes, we could. And if we knew their scores at time one, if they had the early warning, one of the two, either exhaustion or cynicism, one of the two signs of burnout, those were people who were, in a sense, moving. Things were changing with them.
Right.
And the question is, would it get better or would it get worse? If, in addition, they were reporting that at least one of those six areas was, you know, problematic, a year later, they had full-blown burnout. If they did not have a problem with the area, their warning sign kind of disappeared a year later. It was as though, well, okay, temporarily, maybe they were really exhausted and whatever, but everything else was going pretty fine and, you know, things got worked out, they coped with it, you know, whatever. And a year later, they didn't show the move to burnout. So it's the two together that were really predictive of, you know, who would be showing greater problems down the road.
Interesting.
So for us, it's not that, you know, we want to be able to predict which of those six areas necessarily is most important. What we assume from the research is that those are the critical six that you need to pay attention to. Workload alone, which is usually the first thing that pops into people's head, is not sufficient. Things can be fine with workload, and it's the other stuff that's going on that could be really stressful and causing the problems. So the six areas of work life really function like a diagnostic, you know. Where are your strengths, but where are your weaknesses? And for different organizations at different times in their development, you know, that could vary all over the map. The important lesson is if people are showing early signs of burnout and you've got some problems in one of those areas, those are the areas you really need to target for intervention, because that's where your problem, you know, the problems that are causing the strain are where they lie.
Right. Well, can you suggest some ways that organizations could apply this?
Well, I'm hopeful that, you know, kind of what the message would be for organizations is that it pays to check in with your employees on a regular basis about what's going on. It's like, you know, like an annual checkup, like you or I might take just to see, you know, for our physical health. How are things doing? Are things fine? Or are we beginning to show some early warnings of, you know, the cholesterol is going up or, you know, blood pressure or whatever it happens to be? And so that you can then take some kinds of actions, and there can be variety to try and address that. But it's not a one-time thing. Next year, 2 years from now, you need to do it again and see how are you doing and, you know, what's working well and what's not. These organizational checkups are relatively easy to do and simple to do. It doesn't, you know, it's only a few questions on our measures. But what we're finding is that it is well worth your while to find out where exactly things are going well and where exactly it looks like there may be some room for improvement, so that when you do make changes of some kind, that you're targeting the right thing. What I have found in other research leading up to this is that in some cases, managers, you know, or CEOs with the best of intentions are trying to do something that will help lower the stress and improve the engagement, you know, of their employees, you know, with the organization.
Right.
but they may be making assumptions about what that thing is or those things are that will make a difference. And I've seen instance after instance in which the solution, quote unquote, or the intervention just fell flat. I mean, it's like a lead balloon because this is not the problem. It really wasn't. And if you checked, if you'd asked, if you sort of found out more about what's going on, you'd realize that it's not a workload issue. It's actually an issue in the community area because you've got, you know, a particular supervisor who is just not able to supervise effectively and things are just falling apart. So
doing this, doing this sort of checkup would allow upper management to see kind of which of these six areas might be most critical in their organization.
Exactly. And because, as I say, sometimes what comes out of the checkups is, one, not necessarily what you might assume. I mean, as I said, I think the sort of the general stereotype that people have is that workload is the thing you've got to pay attention to. And it is indeed predictive of the exhaustion dimension of burnout. No surprise there. It makes a lot of sense.
Right.
But when people are experiencing a fair amount of emotional strain on the job that develops into burnout, it's not just about workload. I mean, sometimes it's workload is impossible because, you know, you're having screaming fights with all your colleagues, you know, or you're working so hard and nobody, you know, pays attention. I mean, you know, you're busting your buns and who notices? Who cares? And so after a while saying, you know, why am I doing this? You know, or you're doing, you know, you're working, as I gave the example before, and something that, you know, just sort of goes against the grain, you know, and it's really not, you know, something that you feel good about how you're, you know, supposed to be doing the work. So there are a variety of different solutions. The diagnostic doesn't tell you what you should do. It just says, here's the area of concern. So just like with a diagnostic and a physical checkup, I mean, there's a number of things that could be done, for example, to lower weight, you know, and you'd kind of work, okay, how might we do it? Well, the same thing. How would you build in, you know, and get people to sort of trust in a greater sense of fairness in how this company runs? What might we do to make sure that people feel recognized and rewarded for it? I mean, you know, what's not working here? I mean, sometimes, here's another example, dealt with an organization where there was an award, cash award, that went out to certain employees, something like a distinguished service award, and it was universally despised by the staff. And when I did the assessment and then and talked with the upper management about it, they were saying, oh, my gosh, I didn't know. They didn't like it. Maybe we need to put more money in it, make it a bigger reward. And I said, no, the issue is not the reward. The issue was fairness. It was perceived as incredibly unfair process as to who got the award and who you had to know. And it went to the supervisor who had nothing to do, but the team got not a penny. I mean, you know, those kinds of things. So it was really, in the assessment of it, you know, fairness was the issue that popped up and said, you know, if you try to design an award that really sowed discontent among your employees, this is a good example of it, change the process and figure out and have staff involved so that they could sort of say, what would be a meaningful way to recognize people who really did something special? Rather than this one, which was so despised that if somebody heard that they were going to get it, they tried to keep it a secret. You know, that doesn't work. So I think the other thing that we find with the checkup is that, particularly in larger organizations, is that you can see whether there's an overall pattern that's emerging, you know, for the organization as a whole, or whether you've got significant differences between different units. So the solution for any problems that are emerging, you know, in this ward, in this hospital, might be quite different than what you need to be doing over in, you know, the oncology unit, let's say, or pediatric. And so rather than assuming that there's a generic one-size-fits-all way of dealing with stress, the checkup kind of says you can be a little bit more targeted and find out really what's most critical for people within these subunits, and so that you're making smarter, wiser, presumably more effective decisions about what the solution is. Do you have a better handle on what the problem is?
Sure. Okay, so if employees are showing sort of inconsistent patterns of burnout, where they're showing maybe one of the signs but not all the signs, and that's coupled with maybe some mismatch or some problems in one of those six job areas you mentioned, then that's an indication to organizations their employees may be on the road to burnout and they need to take some action.
Right, right. Okay. And, you know, I would even go further and say if you just looked at the six areas in the checkup, because they are connected, you know, to differences in burnout, and focus on, you know, what's looking reasonably good, what's not, and use that as kind of guidelines for how could we make this a better workplace.
Well, then, Christina, what would you say is the bottom line for managers?
I would say the bottom line is that burnout is not inevitable and it's not fatal, that there are things that can be done to prevent burnout from occurring, to enhance people's sense of engagement with their work, but that a lot of the focus has to be on what's going on in the job situation, in the job environment, rather than simply focusing on what might be perceived as personal problems or personal weaknesses of individuals.
Well, we've been talking with Christina Maslach from the University of California, Berkeley. Christina, thanks again for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for downloading Under New Management, a podcast of the Organizational Behavior Division of the Academy of Management. The OB division has over 5,000 members dedicated to the science and practice of organizational behavior. For more information about the OB division, visit www.obweb.org. For more information about the Academy of Management and its over 17,000 members worldwide, visit www.aomonline.org. Computer support for this podcast is provided by Vu Tran.